This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
And the power play starts now. Ovechkin scores! The faceoff win to him. Bang, bang, see you later. Ovechkin makes it 1-0, Washington!
Well, who else when you need a power play goal to get it going? Nice faceoff win right to him. We've seen it so many times over the years. That quick snapshot. Ovechkin had no chance on that one. A great, great shot. Good first goal, power play goal. That's all, everything we wanted.
Bring on Carolina. By the way, the Caps are underdogs against the Hurricanes. More on that coming up. But Washington has advanced past the first round for the first time in seven seasons since they won the Cup. They needed that. They got it. 4-1. They were the better team throughout. And Ovechkin last night off the faceoff on the power play with his fourth playoff goal as called by John Walton and company on the radio home for your Washington Capitals on our sister station 106.7 The Fan. Good morning, everybody. Max is with me. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN will join us on the show at 10:30. So Greg Wyshynski coming up in about 25 minutes. We'll get his thoughts on what just transpired and have him preview the upcoming series against Carolina. Carolina was waiting after they put away New Jersey the night before, 5-4 in double overtime, but to end that series 4-1 as well. Look, big picture, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and give you the hockey breakdown as to why the Caps are moving on against Montreal. Clearly, they got excellent goaltending from Logan Thompson, even though he had gotten injured at one point in the series. The Tom Wilson hit in Game 4 with the Caps trailing 2-1 in the third period was probably the biggest moment in the series. It led to the game-tying goal, and ultimately the Caps took Game 4. If not for the Wilson hit, we might be sitting here talking about the Caps having a series lead, not having a series already clinched. The Caps seemed to be the bigger, stronger team throughout. But man, there were a lot of moments in this series, including the first 7 or 8 minutes in the game last night, and for much of the third period last night, where Montreal certainly seemed up to the task. They just couldn't beat Logan Thompson last night. We know what their first line had the capability of being. You know, we saw that certainly in Game 1 when they came back to tie the game 2-2, a game in which the Caps ultimately won in overtime with the OV first overtime in the postseason goal ever. But that first line of Caulfield and Suzuki and Slavkovsky was, you know, hell to deal with at times. They just didn't generate enough goals, even though they generated what seemed to be a lot of opportunities. But the Caps withstood it. They withstood those first 7 minutes. They didn't give up a goal. Logan Thompson didn't give up a goal. And they ended up getting one off that faceoff. What a shot by Ovechkin. What a season. And what a start to the postseason with 4 goals, second most so far in the entirety of the NHL playoffs. Montreal, everybody says, is young and they're coming, but they're not coming right now. Washington moves on, and I'm telling you, that for this franchise was a big deal, because had they not gotten through this first round, there would have been a lot of discussion about, once again, being playoff chokes. And the 7 year since the Cup would look even further in the rear view. It would be even more distant in the rear view. This was too much of an unexpected season in terms of performance, too much of a fun season because of Ovi to go out in the first round. And they didn't. You know, they got it done. They Spencer Carberry, you know, made the comment that, you know, after the game that, you know, we're able to accomplish something that we haven't accomplished in a while around here. At least he recognized that. But I don't think he has been around long enough to recognize what the discussion would have been had they not gotten through the first round. But they did, because they were the better team. They were the better team in most of their games this year, and it held up in the first round. Now you get Carolina. Carolina, I don't know anything about Carolina. That's why I'm having Greg Wyshynski on the show. And I'll have somebody else, a hockey guest, on the show tomorrow to preview the series. And probably Monday as well. But Carolina's favored. They are a minus 150 favorite in this series, even though the Caps have home ice advantage. Even though the Caps ended up with a better regular season than Carolina did. The Caps ended up with 12 more points than Carolina did this year. But Washington, we talked about this during the regular season, and we talked about it as we got ready to watch them in the postseason. For whatever reason, odds makers and some of the experts out there, they like Carolina more in the East. They like Florida more in the East. They liked Tampa more in the East. Tampa's gone now. Florida eliminated them in Game 5 last night. They liked Toronto and still like maybe Toronto more. But they're going to play the games anyway, and in hockey, you just never know, and goaltending is so big, and Logan Thompson has come up huge. Really, really big win. You could see on some level some relief at the end of the game as the handshake line took place. Like, thank God we're on the right side of this handshake, the winning side of this handshake, because it would have been painful had it gone the other way. But really, there was no threat of this series. Not at any point did it feel like, uh-oh, they're in trouble. You know, down 2-1, third period, game four, after they got whipped on Friday night, maybe you're thinking, we're pretty close to getting to 2-2. But the Wilson hit changed it, and they've got players that have been there and made plays like that. Wilson's one of them, and it was big. So they're moving on, and they'll start Monday night at home against Carolina. The rest of the postseason out west, all four of the Western Conference series are all still alive. They're all 3-2 series, while three of the four in the Eastern Conference are done. Toronto still has to win another game to close out Ottawa. They've got a 3-2 series lead there. Greg Wyshynski, ESPN's senior writer, will join me at 10:30 to talk about the series just completed and to preview the Carolina series. Now, Max is a big hockey guy.
That's right.
And a big Caps guy, so Do you feel really good, or do you feel really relieved that they're through this first round?
A little bit of both, if I'm being honest with you.
Yep.
A little bit of, because the goaltending for this series, I don't want it to be lost in any of the physicality or any of the confrontation that happened. Outstanding goalie play from both teams, from Logan Thompson, from Dobesh, from Montembeau. They all played great. The Caps were just able to kind of stick to their game, not let Montreal kind of get into their heads in this in game five. So they just played discipline. They played a shutdown game, and I'm glad we're moving on. It is. I mean, moving on from a series in the NHL playoffs is always relieving. You know, there's always just a little like, okay, we can relax, we can shake it out a little bit.
Yeah, no, it's a really good win, and this is a long time coming, because 2018 is not just a few years ago now.
First time they clinched at home. First time they clinched at home in 10 years.
That's crazy. When
insane.
I saw that pop up last night, so I went and looked it up. They clinched at home over the Islanders that mm-hmm. year in a seventh and deciding game, 2-1, and then they ended up losing in the next series in seven to the Rangers. But that's crazy, considering that they've essentially been a playoff team almost every year, but I think two or three maybe.
Yeah.
Is it two or three?
I think it's two. Yeah. 'Cause 21 was the Reardon season that just went awry and they completely missed the playoffs and just didn't play well.
But it's amazing that it's been 10 years since they've clinched a playoff series at home. When I saw that pop up, I thought about 2018. I remember they closed it out in six at Columbus after, by the way, trailing in that series 2-0. They obviously, in that famous and really one of the all-time great wins in franchise history, beating Pittsburgh in game six in overtime on the road. And then they had to come back from 3-2 to beat Tampa, including winning 3-0 or 4-0 in game seven, because I know Tampa didn't score in those final two games. And then, of course, they won the cup in Vegas in a fifth game. So, been a long time, but, you know, it's seven of those years they hadn't won a series, or for six of those seasons they hadn't won a series anywhere, road or at home. Good for the Caps. Keep this, you know, time of the year rolling here. And look, it's hockey. They've got as good a chance as anybody else, no matter what the odds say. They'll have a shot against Carolina. And I know Wyshynski, when he's been on with us previously during this season, has said that he values the Caps a lot higher than some of the odds makers and some of the other people out there. So we'll get his thoughts coming up in just a bit. So I wanted to mention something that we'll end up taking calls on, I think, maybe a little bit later on in the show. But I yesterday was asked about, what are they going to do for a pass rusher? This came from Lars. Lars wrote, where's the pass rush coming from, Kevin? Is there another move they can make? Yeah, I mean, Za'Darius Smith is still out there. You know, he played last year in Cleveland and then got traded to Detroit when Aiden Hutchinson went down. He had 9 sacks. It's more than anybody Washington has on their current roster had last year. Za'Darius Smith is getting up there a little bit. People were a little bit concerned with his 2023 season in Cleveland after he left Minnesota with a big year and had multiple big years in Green Bay because he had just 5.5 sacks and he looked a little bit old and a little bit slower, but he had a good season last year. 2 different teams, 9 sacks. He's out there. But that's not the guy that I wanted to talk about, because when I got this, I just looked at sort of the remaining free agents that are out there and the moves that Washington could still make moving forward. And I came across this guy, and I'm interested. Nick Chubb, running back. Cleveland drafted 2 running backs last weekend. They drafted Judkins from Ohio State, and they drafted Sampson from Tennessee. A clear indication that they are not going to come back to Nick Chubb to try to get him on a 1-year, you know, deal. As he is 29 years old, will turn 30, I think, during the season next year. Nick Chubb has been, during the course of his career, at times, an elite running back. His issue, of course, has been staying healthy. Nick Chubb is 29 years old. Nick Chubb's had some incredible seasons. He rushed for 1,494 yards in 2019, averaged 5 yards a carry. In 2022, just 3 seasons ago, in 17 games for the Browns, 1,525 yards, 12 touchdowns, 5.1 yards per carry. He started off 2023, and before getting injured, 28 carries, 170 yards, 6.1 yards per carry. And then last year, after being injured and then coming back during the season, he had a season in which he rushed for just 3.3 yards and then broke his foot at the end of the season. This is the issue with Chubb. It's health more than anything else. He came back last year off of a knee injury in October and didn't look to be the same back. Now, Cleveland wasn't a very good team either. They were no threat to throw the football as long as Deshaun Watson was playing. Defensively, they were good, but they just wore down game in and game out because they just didn't have the quarterback play. And there was thought that Chubb may, you know, after multiple injuries, maybe that's it. Now, he's posted videos recently of himself working out. Andrew Berry, GM, said that he looks great. And he's out there and he's available for probably a 1-year, not a total 100% prove it deal, But I would bet it would be heavy on incentives. And there are teams sniffing around. Chicago apparently is very interested. They have DeAndre Swift, and that's essentially it. And I thought about him, and I'm like, you know, at his best, man, we have seen this dude dominate games. At his best, at his healthiest, he is a true lead back, every down back, and borderline elite. Like borderline up there with the best in the game. Obviously, this would be all health driven. He's got to, you know, meet your med team's, you know, specs on this guy's cool. The knee's good, the foot's good, the shoulder's good. This guy's fine. You know, now, will he get injured? He's proven to be somewhat injury. He just has the injury bug. He seems to be one of those guys that gets injured. But if he's healthy, healthy enough right now to be considered to be Nick Chubb, I'd take a flyer on him. Absolutely. I mean, they picked a running back in the 7th round. We can talk about Adam Peters cooking and playing chess over checkers and that Jacory Kroski-Merritt's going to be the steal of the draft. And I read somewhere, somebody sent me something that some draft analyst thinks he's going to be the steal of the draft. Okay, well, maybe. Nick Chubb's proven. And if you got him on a 1-year, you know, $6, $7 million deal with a lot of it in incentives and not a lot of it guaranteed, sign me up for Nick Chubb. He's much better than Brian Robinson Jr. I think we can all agree on that. Now, you know, is he going to be healthy? Give it a shot. You know, you've got Brian Robinson Jr. if he breaks a leg or if he tears a knee again or if he breaks a foot or tears a shoulder. Whatever, you know, he's had everything. But I would definitely, the Za'Darius Smith thing, I'm okay with. You know, to me, you're trying to get, you know, the sack total that Fowler Jr. left you with, 10.5, regardless of what we say about him as a run stopper. He got 10.5 sacks last year for this team. You know, can they scheme up 10.5 for somebody else? You know, can they scheme up 10.5 for Dietrich Wise or Dorrance Armstrong or Frankie Louvu? Maybe. But I'd be really, really interested in taking a look at Nick Chubb. Again, there is some thought that when he came back last year, he was not the same player. Okay? I'm just saying, let's take a look. Let's make sure that he's not, you know, potentially going to be the same player again. There have been videos out there with him squatting 600 pounds. So, you know, him essentially saying the leg issues are behind me. You know, this dude's always had, you know, great feel for the game, great hands, been a great pass pro guy in the backfield. You know, part of the reason that Chicago is interested, Chicago's going for it to a certain degree. You know, they, in Ben Johnson's first year, you know, they're obviously very active in free agency with their additions for Caleb Williams. You know, they drafted Luther Burden in the 2nd round. They drafted Colston Loveland, the tight end, in the 1st round. You know, they added Joe Thuney. They added, who did they add defensively? They added somebody old but really good defensively. Hold on, where is it? Oh, yeah, Grady Jarrett they added. I mean, Grady Jarrett was still good last year at 30-whatever years old he is. You know, and DeAndre Swift and Nick Chubb, I'm pretty sure were teammates at Georgia. It was like a 1-2 punch, Swift and Chubb at Georgia. I don't know, man. I'd like to see another NFC team be interested and take a shot because you know what? Washington could use a bellwether back. I'd be very interested in finding out whether or not Nick Chubb is healthy enough to be Nick Chubb next year. This dude, when he's been healthy and been on the field, has been elite. His career average yards per carry is 5.1. This guy finds the end zone. He's a home run threat. He is a short yardage threat. He's everything. He can catch the football out of the backfield. He had a season, the season in which he rushed for 1,494 yards year 2 in the league. He also caught 36 passes out of the backfield. Anyway, we'll come back to this. I'd be interested in just players that are out there that you've said, you know, there's still some guys out there, and I'll mention some of the other guys. But Chubb would be really interesting to me. I still think Washington needs a running back. You know, not knowing much other than what I watched, like all of you did, about the rookie running back that they took in the draft, Merritt. All right. We'll do a quick what do you got when we come back, and then we will have Greg Wyshynski on to talk Caps and preview Caps Hurricanes. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. So what do I got today? J.J. Redick. Oh, there are a lot of people that are happy that J.J. Redick's Lakers are out in the first round. If you didn't stay up and watch, and I bet most of you did not, Minnesota eliminated the Lakers last night, 103-96 in five games, clinching the series in Los Angeles. And J.J. Redick in his first year did win 50-plus games, but they're out in the first round of the postseason. This was him the other day, before the game, before game five, talking about how, or he was asked about not subbing in game four in the second half. For those of you who don't know, in game four, in a 2-1 series, J.J. Redick did not sub anybody out in an entire half of playoff basketball. That meant 40-year-old LeBron James played all 24 minutes of the second half. So did Luka Doncic. LeBron ended up playing 46 of the 48 minutes in the game. Luka played 46 of the 48 minutes in the game. And they appeared to wear down as the game went on. And this was J.J. Redick being asked a question about it the other day.
As you watch the film, what do you recall about your thought process in the moment? Sticking with the five you stuck with in the fourth quarter the other day. And is there an assistant or someone maybe that you'll lean on tonight, maybe to try to get, you know, some other guys involved if that opportunity presents
itself? Are you saying that because I'm inexperienced and that was an inexperienced decision that I made? Do you think I don't talk to my assistants about substitutions every single timeout?
No, I just think there's a lot of coaches lean on their assistants in those situations.
As do I, every single time. That's a weird assumption.
And then he just got up and walked off. Rather sensitive, on edge. Look, he is not an easy swallow. He is an acquired taste. I think he's very, very smart. I actually enjoyed him as an analyst. But there was a part of him that was incredibly obnoxious as an analyst, you know, especially when he went down the path of ridiculing players of the past. Not that he was wrong about a lot of it. And when he took the coaching job, it was kind of an out-of-the-box hire. Remember, they offered Dan Hurley the job first. J.J. Redick was not the first choice. There are a lot of people I know that are thrilled that the Lakers are out and that J.J. Redick in his first year of coaching is out in the first round. Now, with that said, it's not his fault, okay? They made a trade for Luka Doncic, and they tried to trade also for Charlotte center Mark Williams. That trade was nixed by the medical. They had nobody big, and they had nobody to defend, and everybody knew that when they made the trade. Luka Doncic could not guard me. At this point, he is a horrible and really a disinterested defender. Not to mention that he dribbles the life out of the basketball on the offensive end. I've said this going back to last year, and I know that he made it to the finals last year. I just don't think a team with a player like Doncic or a player like James Harden, I just don't think that style of play makes it 4 out of 7 for 4 straight series in the postseason. NBA players actually guard and play defense in the playoffs. What's interesting to me, though, is J.J. Redick was clearly on edge. Last night, I thought the criticism was actually more apt. Rudy Gobert went for a career performance against the Lakers, who did not play their biggest guy, did not play a center in the game. The center that they would have played was Jackson Hayes. He didn't play 1 minute. And Rudy Gobert went for 27 and 24 in the game. 12 of 15 in the game, had 2 block shots. Lakers had absolutely no resistance defensively, and found it very difficult offensively to get anything near the rim consistently because of Rudy Gobert. And he didn't play it. He didn't try to play anybody big in the game. I think that's a reasonable criticism. But the Lakers are out, and I wonder what LeBron's going to do. I think this could be it for LeBron in L.A., or maybe it for LeBron, period. I think that would surprise a lot of people if he left and went somewhere else. But it does not look like he's, you know, having a great time playing with Luka Doncic. You know, and Nico Harrison, the GM in Dallas, has got to be doing cartwheels after last night. Thank God. Look, they had a lot of injuries. Anthony Davis, you know, they lost Kyrie Irving, the whole thing. But if Luka had made a run after that trade, it would have looked really bad. Interesting development out west, because Minnesota's younger and better, period. They're going to be a threat here in the next series against either Denver or the Clippers. We may see, and I know the NBA doesn't want it, we may see a Minnesota-Oklahoma City Western Conference final. Woo! And how about if you got Oklahoma City-Cleveland or Minnesota-Cleveland in the NBA finals? The NBA needs LeBron. They need the Lakers to advance. That didn't happen. Greg Wyshynski next on the Caps. Kevin Sheehan Show. The Team 980 and theteam980.com.
All right, last night, the Washington Capitals close out Montreal 4-1. First home clinch in 10 years. Their first series win since 2018. They will face Carolina in round two. Last night, a Pittsburgh Pirates fan fell 21 feet over the Roberto Clemente wall and onto the warning track. Umpires had to call the halt to the contest while EMS and training staff tended to him as players looked on visibly shaken. He remains in critical condition at Allegheny General Hospital. The Washington Nationals fell to the Phillies 7-2. Jake Irvin pitched six innings, gave up eight hits and six earned runs. The Nats dropped to 13-18. And that is what's trending. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1. Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
4-1 last night to clinch this series 4-1. The Caps are on to the second round for the first time in 7 years. Waiting for them, the Carolina Hurricanes. Greg Wyshynski is the senior NHL writer at ESPN, and he joins us right now at Wyshynski on X on Twitter, W-Y-S-H-Y-N-S-K-I. By the way, last night he had the over in the Blues-Jets game, and it hit. I just was scrolling through your timeline of the last 24 hours, and that game went 5-3. I believe that's 8. That's over 5.5. Winner. Or do you get asked to do a lot of that for ESPN Bet?
Yeah, you know, I've been doing that show since it started when it was Daily Wager. I'm kind of their hockey guy. It's changed a little bit because I used to be more explicit with with my picks, but since ESPN has its own sports book now, there's like some rules for insiders giving picks and stuff. So I've had to kind of like talk about it in a more nuanced way. But that does allow me to say, hey, I do believe the Jets and Blues will probably score at least 6 goals combined. and then we can take that information as it was. But it was interesting last night. The theory from the host on the show were, well, Connor Hellebuck's going to have a bounce-back game. And I'm like, well, his bounce-back game is still going to probably be a couple goals on the board. So I still expected it to be a high-scoring game last night, and it was.
Actually, that's interesting that you said that. So our for ESPN Bet, the sides, you know, teams rather than totals, that's frowned on right now because it shows some sort of bias, or is it, so you, are most of these on air wagers or on social media wagers? I'm not following it. I don't use ESPN Bet, and I'm sure it's great, but is that how it works with most of you guys who are on air and people know?
It's got nothing to do with bias, or it's got nothing to do with like you casting your lot for one team or another, because we do that before every playoff.
Sure.
I mean, like, you can go.
That's what I was
Lord knows, you know, Florida Panthers fans have screenshotted my pick of the Lightning in 7 this morning and sent it my way on Twitter. So it's not about bias. I mean, I it's well above my pay grade, but I just know that, you know, there is a discouraging of of making like specific wagers, I guess, after ESPN Bet came online. And it's kind of just been that way since. It doesn't bother me either way. I go on that show to have some fun and share some information, whether it's like injury reports or my own insight. And, in all honesty, it's made my life easier when we used to do Daily Wager, and I would go on there and be like, I like so-and-such on the puck line. I felt a lot of pressure to be right because I knew that people were going to take my advice. Because they thought they know, you know, that I at least have a tangential knowledge of the sport, so it made my life a little bit easier to know
dangerous.
That.
Sometimes that's dangerous. I think we've all learned over the years. Sometimes too much information actually can work against you. But anyway,
yeah, exactly. So it's made my life a little bit easier to not have to actually like go on there and be like plant my flag on a pick or something.
Right. All right. Let's talk Caps. Why did they win and win fairly easily in five games?
They were the better team. They were the deeper team. They were the more experienced team. They were the team with the better goaltending. Pick your answer. I respect that Montreal managed to not be the team that fell down flat on its face at the end of the season in the Eastern Conference like everyone else around the bubble did and got in. I think it's going to really help their young players to have had this experience. But they were like, what, a minus 21 or 22 in goal differential? I mean, they weren't a very good hockey team. So the Capitals should have made quick work of them. They did make quick work of them. And I found it interesting that, you know, the one thing that wasn't really working for the Caps in the series did work really well in last night, which was their power play. It was 1-for-10 coming into game 5. And now, as we look ahead to the Carolina series, things get really interesting vis-a-vis what that power play does for the Capitals and how good Carolina is in preventing power play goals.
Before we get to Carolina, you mentioned goaltending. Just how good was Logan Thompson in this series? I know what his save percentage is. I can look at that. But, you know, beyond the being able to quantify it, he just seemed to make incredible timely saves as well. How would you describe his performance in the five games?
Well, miraculous in the sense that when he was injured, I thought he was cooked for the series, maybe for the playoffs. Like that guy might be Wolverine with his healing abilities, because like I did not expect to see him again against Montreal the way he came off the ice. But again, didn't miss a beat. Came back in next game, and then we see what he did. It's what he's done at the peak of his powers during the regular season, being the great last line of defense, making good saves, playing within himself, and there's no doubt that the way that he's played, and I'm not trying to shortchange Lindgren too, he's a good goalie too, but both of them have given this Capitals team the foundation on which they can build a lot of other great things this season. He was really good, but you mentioned something about him making timely saves, and I think that's pretty much the story of the series for me, which is, you know, there's always that tension for the Capitals when they're really good and they're playing someone not as good in the playoffs. even with the Cup, there's that psychological baggage and damage from those years of playoff disappointments. And the most impressive thing for me about the Capitals, and I think Thompson's a part of this, is not giving any oxygen whatsoever to a Montreal upset bid. They win game one in overtime on the Ovi goal. They go to Montreal. They maybe have a little trouble spot here and there, but ultimately they win game four and kind of shut down any panic points in a way that, let's say, the Toronto Maple Leafs can't, to use that example. I was just really impressed with the efficiency of the Capitals and more than anything, their ability to not even give the Canadiens a sniff of a potential upset in the series. It was really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I thought there was one moment, and that is, you know, Montreal led in the third period 2-1 in game four with, you know, a chance to even up the series, and Wilson's hit really was significant. It led to the game tying goal, and the Caps went on to win that game. But it's interesting because you understand it, you've lived it, you've covered it. And I was going to ask you to talk about that in this context. I think we would all feel, and you would feel, had the series been 2-2, that Game 5 would have been one of those tension Caps games where it's like, oh my God, they're at home, are they going to blow it? Yet, many of the players on that team never experienced that, and the coach has never experienced that. So would it have mattered?
Of course it would have mattered, because the fans have experienced it, and they're the ones who create the atmosphere in the arena. I mean, there's a reason the Toronto Maple Leafs haven't won the Stanley Cup since 1967. It's not because Mitch Marner was on that 68 team. It's because you have fans that follow the Leafs generationally that have had the trauma of playoff disappointments. So even though the Capitals have a Stanley Cup banner in the rafters, the feelings that are left over from Game 7 losses to the Rangers and the blowing the Montreal series with Yaroslav Halak and those Penguins series, like all of that still lingers in the back of the minds. Those ghosts still exist inside the arena. And when, you know, when things aren't going right for the Capitals in a playoff series, they bubble back up to the surface. So even if the players aren't a part of it, they'll feel it, because anyone who's been in the arena during one of those series where things aren't going well, or all of a sudden they aren't meeting expectations, you can literally like feel it in the air.
It's so true, and I talked a lot about that going into the series. I think I even talked to you about it before the series began, and you know, there was kind of this what do they need to do, you know, since they haven't done anything in 7 years, they haven't won a series since the year they won the Cup. And I think now that they've gotten through this first round and did it impressively in a season that's going to be memorable, right, Greg, for OV number one, number two, you know, exceeding expectations wildly with respect to their regular season. And now I think they're in the clear. Now I think it's icing on the cake because they're actually an underdog in this next series. Do you agree with that?
Do I agree that they're an underdog, or do I agree that
they're... No, do you agree that now that everybody can exhale and they've accomplished, you know, they've gotten past the point in which people would have just absolutely eviscerated them. They got into this second round for the first time in 7 years. And if they lose to Carolina, people will understand because they're playing a team that's actually, you know, favored.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. I think the baseline for the Capitals in this phase of the franchise was always relevancy. And you know, we've talked before, me and you, about the difference between what the Capitals did to surround Ovechkin with a playoff quality team and what the Penguins didn't do in surrounding their core with the same kind of team. And so while the Penguins are flopping and flailing and parting ways with their coach and wondering what the next phase is going to be, not only do the Capitals have a playoff team on their hands and one that I think is going to play in the conference final, not to spoil my pick or anything, but also one that has given us a nod to the future in the way that Protas has played, in the way that McMichael has played, in seeing Ryan Leonard. Like, we're getting a vibe of, you know, Ovechkin has captured the record. He probably has another year left at the, you know, maybe two at the most. But now you can be confident that things are progressing in a positive way post Ovechkin. And you know, if they push through and play for a championship, that's awesome. But you, like you said, I think the first round playoff win just adds to the proof of concept about where the franchise is headed.
Yeah, I mean, you started that, and we have talked about this, about Pittsburgh not surrounding Crosby and the Caps doing a better job of surrounding Ovechkin. These are two franchises that have stood side by side with two superstar players, you know, in an era that's, you know, been almost defined by those two players. And even though they've got three cups and the Caps have one, it seems to me that what you're saying is the Caps actually are better at roster construction.
At this point, for sure. I mean, and you know, maybe not in the height, the apex of the rivalry and the apex of the Penguins' time as a contender, where they did a really good job of building out their bottom six and bringing on people like Phil Kessel and others that really did make a difference on that team. But, you know, you've got to give the Caps their credit for having that sense of transition and having the pipeline from Hershey and having the management team in place to identify players that they've bought low on and that have really, you know, flourished, like Strom, or, you know, now you're seeing Dubois and Chychrun kind of do the same thing. Like, it's been really impressive to see how they've been able to maintain success while the Penguins and the Blackhawks too, I think you could put them in there as well, as you know, another team that was sort of dynastic at the same time as Pittsburgh was, had to really, you know, either you have one team that's scratching and clawing and trying to stay relevant in the face of what should be a rebuild, and then another team in Chicago that had to go into a complete rebuild, and the Capitals haven't.
All right, let's talk about the next series. You didn't have to spoil it, but you did, and that's fine. But why do you like the Caps to beat Carolina?
I think the Caps' cohesion is incredible. I love the vibe of the team. I love the fact that they are getting contributions from throughout their lineup. And I think that for the second straight series, with due respect to Freddie Anderson and what he's able to do when he's healthy and when he's in the lineup, I think the Capitals have a goaltending advantage in this series. I'm not trying to poo-poo Carolina. Like, Carolina could win the Cup if things go right for them. They're a very sound team with players that can make a difference offensively. And their special teams are pretty great, especially their penalty kill. I watched them in every game against the Devils, though, and left very unimpressed. I look at the Capitals and I look at the Carolina Hurricanes, and this is a manageable matchup for Washington. This is not a distinct disadvantage. They are not a deep underdog. I think the way the Caps are playing right now, and like you said, getting through this series with Montreal and feeling a little bit of confidence, I think they're going to play for a conference championship. Now, I think they're going to lose to whoever comes out of the Atlantic, but I do think that they're going to get past Carolina.
So who will come out of the Atlantic?
Florida. I mean, I picked the Lightning because they had played really well in the regular season, and I figured this collection of Lightning players was going to be able to match the Panthers' depth, and I thought Vasilevsky was going to be a big difference in the series. And, you know, they're still Florida, man. They're just great. They are the team right now. They are the team to beat. Their core group of players can beat you offensively or punch you in the mouth. The augmentations they've made to the roster, like Brad Marchand, our old friend Nate Schmidt, like all those guys have worked out great. Bobrovsky does what you need him to do in the playoffs in big spots. Like, they're just really well built, and they're playing with a confidence right now that is extremely rare in this sport to have for three consecutive seasons. But I mean, they punched Tampa in the mouth, and Tampa staggered and didn't know what to do, and, you know, relegated Nikita Kucherov to one assist and four losses, which is, I mean, insane. So it's Florida. I'd be shocked if it wasn't Florida.
So you like Florida and the Caps in the Eastern Conference Final, with Florida advancing to try to defend the cup they won last year. The West, you've got four incredibly competitive series. We've got four game sixes. What's stood out West?
The Dallas-Colorado series was always the one that I thought was the most interesting, and it's remained that way. I'm shocked that we're where we are in the Dallas series. Like, I picked Dallas to win the series because I picked Dallas to win the cup. So if I'm going to look smart, then I gotta ride that train. But I didn't think that without Miro Heiskanen and without Jason Robertson, they'd win the series, let alone have a chance to eliminate Colorado in game six. And if you're Colorado, with all of the augmentations you made to your roster, whether it's blowing up your goaltending for Mackenzie Blackwood, or, you know, acquiring Brock Nelson and Ryan Lindgren and Charlie Coyle at the trade deadline, getting your captain Gabe Landeskog back for the first time since you lifted the cup, and that emotional moment, like, all of those things should mean that you're going to win this series. But at this moment, it's precarious, and Dallas has the momentum. They had the advantage, and in game five, they had something that they hadn't had previously in the series, despite playing that, you know, that well, which was their star players flexing and making a difference and hitting the score sheet. So it's dangerous times for Colorado, which was a team that I think a lot of people thought would advance from the series. And if they advanced from the series, thought they could win the cup.
Thank you, as always. It's fun to talk to you about this stuff. Appreciate it, and hopefully there's more opportunities to talk Caps over the next month or so. Greg, appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Greg Wyshynski, everybody, ESPN's senior NHL writer. He likes the Caps to beat the Carolina Hurricanes. That series starts Monday night at Capital One Arena. All right, next. Do you agree with me that Nick Chubb would be worthy to pursue? More on that next if you want to weigh in, 301-230-0980. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.